The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger as we bring you the 2009 NFL and college football season in style. We've got you covered with game insight, opinion, and football expertise. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter.
There is no bigger honor than to go into the professional Hall of Fame or college Hall of Fame.
Each week, the Big E Sports Show will take you under the helmet to bring you the latest talk on the 2009 season of college and pro football.
Is there maximum effort out there? Because that's one thing you don't have to be talented at. You don't need talent to try hard. And that's the thing that I'm looking for out of them this year.
Under the Helmet with Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend once again on the Big E Sports Show, and it is time, as promised, to recap the NFL draft, and it is always a pleasure to catch up with, he's our favorite, former NFL player and Nebraska Husker Jason Peter, who I am very confident he will have some great perspective on the 2010 draft. How are you, Jason? We missed you last week.
I'm great. How are you? I don't even know if I have to ask after that draft, and the absurd number of players from Oklahoma that were drafted in the first round, and in particular the top four picks, there's, I think, no other way that you could be feeling than happy right now.
Well, I don't know if you were going to talk to me about Oklahoma football, being excited about that, or the fact that the mighty Oklahoma, the Oklahoma City Thunder, are playing so well, and we'll see how it all shakes out this weekend. But let's start off by talking about the NFL draft. Sam Bradford, no real surprise there. You had, you know, even projected that, of course, being the first overall pick going to the St. Louis Rams. I think what is remarkable, Jason, is that he only threw 69 passes for the Sooners last fall, and I guess just the Rams, they saw enough of him to say, you know what, this is our guy.
Well, I think you could look at Sam Bradford and say if he left after his sophomore year, he would have been the number one pick in the draft. Unfortunately, he got banged up, but I was able to see some of his pro day. There were some cameras there, and I tell you, this guy, he looked like an NFL quarterback, and you're talking about a guy who was coming off of surgery, coming off of an injury, to be able to get his body back in shape the way that he has, and to be able to go out and execute and make all the throws on the field, all the while you're not even 100% healthy, I think it says something about Sam Bradford. And look, I mean, there's no questioning whether or not this kid can play football. It's just a matter, like all of the guys that were picked over the weekend, how well can they adjust to the NFL game? How well can they pick up the mental side of the game? Because for a lot of them, especially when you're talking about the top two rounds, these kids are physically gifted. I mean, it's usually not a physical thing. It ends up being a mental thing. So it'll be interesting to see how they do. But I think St. Louis picking Bradford was a great pick. They had released Mark Bulger, and they need a new face of the franchise. You got Spagnuolo, who's taken over the head coaching job there last year. Not a great year, and this is, I think, a pick that really they had to make. I think when you talk about finding that new face, Sam Bradford's your guy.
And of course, it is interesting, Jason, as you talk about just how talented Sam Bradford is, and even just the mental muscle that he has that perhaps gave him the edge to be the number one selection overall. But NFL talent evaluators, they just raved about his accuracy, and they're saying perhaps this is the best guy that had entered the draft since Peyton Manning. Do you think that's a little bit too high, or is that pretty accurate?
Well, there's always, it's just natural for people to compare to established players, to guys that are future Hall of Famers. You see it at every level, whether it's high school kids that are coming to college or college kids that are going to the NFL. It's just natural, I think, for people to pick out these star players, because those are the players that most people recognize. Those are the people, when they're reading an article, if you say, oh, well, he reminds me of Joe Schmo, who played in 1972, people would be like, well, who the heck are you talking about? So there's always a reason for it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, when you start comparing a college kid who hasn't played a down to maybe the greatest quarterback who ever played the game, You're starting to stretch it a little bit, but I just think as far as the size, I mean, they're both big guys, 6'5", 6'6". Peyton, since the time that he was a senior when we played him in the Orange Bowl to where he is now, he's like a different person. I mean, just with the bulk that he's added, and those are the same things that Sam Bradford's going to do. But like I said to start off, the place where Peyton separates himself and the place where Tom Brady separates himself, all the great quarterbacks, where they separate themselves is the mental game and the understanding of not only what you're trying to do. That's a given. You got to understand what the defense is trying to do and recognize where the blitz is coming from, and is the eighth guy in the box, and is this just a disguise that they're showing out there in coverage, or are they going to play this actual man coverage or 11 robber, or what are they going to do? So these are all kind of things that go along with making that transition to the NFL.
Sam Bradford, he was the third Sooner in school history to go first in the round. Of course, Leroy Selman in 1976 and Billy Sims in 80. You were just a baby back then, weren't you, Jason Peter?
I don't even think I'd put on a jock strap by then.
Okay, so Oklahoma didn't start there. Of course, the NFL draft record, as you had said, four Sooners in the first round. What about offensive tackle Trent Williams? He went to the Washington Redskins.
Yeah. I think the biggest surprise or the biggest shocker with that pick was not necessarily the pick, was that the commissioner, the way he announced the pick was Trent Silverback Williams, and that,
yeah.
I got to be honest, my jaw hit the ground, and I've been shocked that people have not been talking about this. They say it was an inside joke, but to me it came off as maybe not appropriate, maybe not the right time to go on national television, prime time, and say that this player's nickname is Silverback or an inside joke. I mean, to me, it just didn't seem right.
Especially this day and time. And then, of course, Jermaine Gresham with the Cincinnati Bengals. He was number 21, I believe.
Right, so that was four in the first round, I believe. Gresham, I mean, he's a top 10 talent. I absolutely love the kid. I was sorry that he didn't get to play this last year, being banged up. But he's a guy who he's got all the physical tools. I mean, 6'6", 245, 55 pounds, somewhere around there, and can run, can stretch the field. He's going to be hard. He's a hard guy for defenses to match up against, because who are you going to bring down? A safety? Well, can he run with that? With Jermaine, there's going to be a size disadvantage where the quarterback is going to be able to throw it up there, and barring, I think, any lapses maybe by the quarterback or errant throws or not recognizing what the defense is doing, I think Jermaine is going to have many advantages over some of those guys in the secondary in a lot of games on Sunday.
Jermaine Gresham, of course, very talented. We are alongside talking to Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. And, the Detroit Lions, their biggest need was talent. Your Nebraska Husker boy, he landed on his feet pretty darn well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I know there was a lot of people that thought Ndamukong Suh should have been the first player, but I think we got to look at the needs. And for St. Louis, they needed a quarterback, so Sam Bradford was the right pick, and Detroit ends up getting their guy. There is some question now about the style of football that he played here at Nebraska and what they're going to ask him to do in Detroit. And what they're going to ask him to do in Detroit is more of that one-gap penetration, playing on the edge. And what he did here at Nebraska was very much a read-and-react type defense. Now, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. I think he is a natural athlete. This was a kid who played soccer for most of his life. He plays basketball, can go out and dribble a basketball and look good doing it. So I don't think asking him to get it in a three technique and kind of get up the field, when you're 305 plus pounds or whatever he is and can run like he can run, he's going to create some problems. Now, again, it all goes back to me, at least for me, goes back to the mental part of it, because a lot of guys are big, fast, strong out there. A lot of guys have those physical tools. The guys that separate themselves, it's because they know what they're doing mentally. And that will be another big question with Ndamukong, but I know he wants to be great. I know going back to his junior year, after his sophomore year was over here, and he, I think, had been upset with the way the team was, the way that he played, and he wanted to be different. And that's kind of when our relationship started. Well, it started before that, but that's maybe where it picked back up again. And he just wanted to constantly pick my brain and what was it like to be part of championship teams? How did you guys do things? What did you do as a player? How much extra did you do? All these questions. And then you hear about him being up in the coach's office watching film after everybody's gone home, and he's the first guy up in the morning before class. He's trying to get an hour of film in, and then after practice, he's staying an extra hour or two. So you know he has those qualities where he wants to be great. Now, I think the big question with a lot of these guys, especially nowadays and the first-round guys, is now once they have that check, that checking account, that has several zeros in it, a lot more zeros than when I was being drafted. But does that desire, does that want, do those qualities that he has now, that he possesses now, do they still kind of stick with him, even though he, in a way, has made it, that he's going to be a rich man? Because that's a lot of the drive, I think, for guys in college and even for guys that maybe don't get drafted in the top one or two rounds, is that they want to make it to that big payday. Well, a lot of these guys, when you talk about these first-rounders, they've already made it now. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys continue to progress, even though they have a bank account that they or their families never have to worry again if they take care of their money right.
Well, I like what the Lions coach Jim Schwartz says, you know, that Ndamukong Suh, that he was just an easy pick for them. He's not a one-year wonder. He's strong. He's good versus the run. He's good versus the pass, and he's a very intelligent guy. I mean, this guy, injury-free, you know, that's a big hypothetical that he could have a real run within the NFL.
Yeah, and that's a question, I think, that's out there for all the players. They can remain injury free, but from the outside, yeah, it looks good. But I mean, you can go back to any draft and you can pick out players that were supposed to be can't miss, so-called guarantees, and it just doesn't work out. For whatever reason, it just doesn't work out. And I'm not saying that it's not going to work out, but I'm not going to be one who say this can't go wrong at all. It could go wrong in St. Louis with Bradford. It could go wrong in Detroit with Sue. It could go wrong in Tampa with Gerald McCoy. I mean, you just never know, because there are so many things that I think go on behind the scenes, whether it's the breakup with the relationship or maybe a parent dies or something happens within the family and other things. I mean, bad investments. Things that take players' minds off of where it should be on the football field to wondering, is he ripping me off, or is my girlfriend cheating on me, or is my kid... Do you know what I mean? There's just so many different things that go along with it that can ultimately, I think, change the course of one's career. But, I think even if Sue isn't a superstar, I think he still plays 10, 12 years, barring any injuries. But, you know, nowadays it's almost going to be difficult for guys like him or Bradford to ever, I think, feel like they've gotten somewhere, because the expectations that are put on these guys already, I mean, because like we just talked about, you hear about can't miss, and he's a guy that's going to be a great player for years and years. And how do the kids ever live up to the expectations? Now, You can't argue with it, though, because when you're given $40 and $50 million, a lot is expected. So it'll be interesting to see, but I like both of those guys, Bradford and Sue.
Of course, we just wrapped up the 2010 NFL draft. And Jason, I have to ask you, I've always wanted to talk to you about this on the program. I believe it was in 97. Were you drafted in 97?
It was a 98 draft.
98 draft. How much, I mean, what is that like when draft day arrives? You get that phone call. I mean, were you there in New York City when it happened? And what is it like when you get that first check in your hand or you go to your bank account? I mean, does your motivation, does your perspective change? I mean, did you have to work extra hard to keep that fire lit underneath you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that's kind of where it came from, my whole rant on kids being able to keep that motivation going once they have money in the bank. And I know from myself, there was a part of me that felt like, whew, well, now I made it. Now I can relax for a little bit. And the truth is, there is no time to relax. Now you've got to work even harder. And for me, it didn't really kick in for maybe that first year that I was in Carolina, that everybody else is moving at this pace of full speed all the time, around the clock, nonstop. You've either got to jump on board or they're going to leave you all behind. So, these are things I think that these kids have to deal with. But for me, draft day, it was pretty uneventful. They didn't invite many players to New York. In fact, I think there was only three players. I think Peyton Manning, I think Ryan Leaf, who back then, I mean, this was a guy who a lot of people thought was better than Peyton, right? One of those can't-miss guys.
Yeah, he's from Great Falls, Montana. Yeah.
I mean, just a disaster. And I think there was also Curtis Enos, who was a running back out of Penn State, who ended up going to the Bears. They had gotten away from inviting all of the 20 or 25 guys because there were players that were sitting there with a camera on them and maybe weren't getting picked till the second round or sometimes even the third round. And they had just decided that, look, we're not going to bring all these players in anymore. It's too much. And some of these kids are being put in bad situations. So we'll just invite three guys that we know are going to get picked in the top five for sure. And that happened to be one of the year that I was coming out. And I got to spend it with my family, though, 40 minutes from New York City in New Jersey. So I wasn't too far from the draft, but just worked out most of the morning and came home. And I think by then my roommate had been picked, Grant Wistrom, and I think they were on the seventh or eighth pick, and I had a guy from Dallas who was at the house from the Cowboys with a private cell phone there just in case Dallas picked me with the eighth pick, but they decided to go a different route, and as soon as they made the pick, the guy packed his bag and he left. but yeah, it wasn't too much longer that I had to wait when Carolina picked me. It was a good day, though.
Well, what a great segue. Since you mentioned the Dallas Cowboys, let's talk about the receiver, Dez Bryant, from Oklahoma State. Of course, that's where he's going to be. He lands on his feet right here in Dallas. And forget the X's and O's. He survived the NFL interview process deluge with a number of tough personal questions. Jason, what was your perspective on this when you heard about this? And he was asked if his mother was a prostitute.
Yeah, Jeff Ireland from the Miami Dolphins. And when I heard about it, at first I guess I was a little shocked, but then I thought about it, and to me, it didn't really shock me, and I can understand almost why he asked that question. You're talking about these kids and giving them tens of millions of dollars. I think you want to know something about the character of the kid, and especially when you're talking about a kid who already has questionable character issues. I think the way that you were raised, if your mother is going out at night and selling herself, that might have an effect on the way that you view women, or the way that you view sex, or the way that you view something, men in life, who knows? But that might be something that has an impact on you as a person. And nowadays these teams, they want to know everything about the player. They want to know, you know, what he was like in grade school all the way up to the time that he is standing there waiting for his name to be called. They want to know the type of character that you have. So for me, it didn't really bother me in the end. I think once I got over the initial shock of the question, I mean, the same thing, would people be, I guess, questioning Jeff Ireland if he was asking about, let's say, somebody's father who, let's say, was Donald Trump-like, that had millions and millions and millions of dollars? When you're talking about giving a kid a signing bonus of $30 or $40 million, whatever it is, wouldn't you be curious to know how that money has affected him, if he still has the desire to keep playing, or now that he has his own money, do you think that, do you understand kind of where I'm going with that? I think it does play a big role when you're talking about a kid's character, you know, the way that he was raised, the environment that he was raised in. So for me, I do understand that if there were good circumstances surrounding it. I mean, now, you can't just come out and ask every kid, hey, was your mother a crack addict, or was your mother a prostitute? I mean, there's got to be some reasoning, some parts of the story maybe that we don't know about Dez Bryant that maybe Jeff Ireland knew about.
Well, and it is interesting, too, because, you know, people that are in Dez Bryant's corner and saying that that was a completely inappropriate question is that Dez Bryant, he has no history of drugs. He has no criminal record. Yes, he got slapped by the NCAA for, I guess, lying, having dinner, lunch, whatever it was, with Deion Sanders, but that it's his mom that has this past. But I think, Jason, and you can really speak to this, being, you know, a former player in the NFL for several years, is that it's not just the player. I mean, you're bringing a whole entourage many times. I mean, you have all these newfound aunts and uncles, and then, you know, of course, they expect you to support them. And I mentioned this on Fox Sports New Mexico earlier, the fact that, was it Anton Walker with the NBA? How many $100 million? And he's dead broke now, and he filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, you used the perfect word, entourage, because, I mean, we all saw, I mean, the whole thing, Pac-Man Jones and the 30 deep that he would roll with into a nightclub. And you know, it's crazy, but that's, I think, part of what these NFL teams and NBA and every other major league, what they have to at least ask themselves and ask the potential client, the potential player, about his upbringing. And is he a guy that is going to roll in with an entourage? Is he a guy that's going to have a lot of those distractions that I was talking about before? Because let's face it, I mean, some of these kids, they don't come from great backgrounds, or they don't come from the communities where it's a white picket fence and the dogs running around and mom's bringing out the pitcher of iced tea or lemonade saying, honey, here, freshen up a little bit. You know, a lot of these kids aren't coming from environments like that. So I think it's important for these guys. I know if I was a GM or if I was an owner of a team, and I'm shelling out millions and millions of dollars to a kid that, for the most part, all I've seen is him run around on the football field and go out and execute. But it's the days of paying guys $30,000 a season, I mean, they're long gone. I mean, you're talking about millions and millions of dollars. So as a business owner, yeah, I would like to know who I'm giving this money to and the environment that he was raised in and the people that are going to be surrounding him.
Jason Peter is along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are quickly running out of time. I want to hit on a couple of other quick topics. Ben Roethlisberger being suspended 6 games by the NFL, and the NFL draft, it's come and gone, and they did not trade him, but suspended 6 games. Does he realize how serious his actions have been?
I hope so. I know he made a comment afterwards about how he was disappointed with the 6-game suspension, and I thought, oh, man, just shut your mouth. Just shut your mouth and be fortunate. Feel blessed that you still have a franchise that has stuck by you so far, and that you still, it looks like they're going to get an opportunity to play football. Now, the whole topic comes up with, you know, it's not a right, it's a privilege to play in the NFL. And, you know, for me, I'm not a big buyer of that. I mean, it's a business, all right? And they're a product, and owners are making a lot of money, and players are making money, but it's a business. But I also think that you do have to conduct yourself, you know, in a reasonable manner, and Ben has certainly not shown that since he's been in the league, but now he's got the court cases to prove it. I just think that he needs to bite his tongue. I think he needs to do his time. I think he just needs to shut his mouth and just get ready for that seventh game of the season. And, you know, don't moan about how you can't play. Just be feel fortunate that you do still have a team. Because like I said last time we spoke, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're always going to be around. Roethlisberger's, no, someone else is going to be in there at one point wearing number 7, playing quarterback, or even more so, maybe he's playing wide receiver and wearing number 7. There'll be a new face with that jersey in no time. But the Steelers, they're there to stay, and they're a big part of the NFL.
Well, let's just hope that he does make better choices. He'll stay out of the bars, stay out of college towns, and hopefully, I think he needs to grow up, to be real honest with you, Jason Peter. Hey, we've only got a couple more minutes. Quickly, just give us a rundown on how did your guys' spring game go? How did it all look, and how was that quarterback situation looking?
It was good. I got to be honest. I only stayed for maybe the first quarter, then I took the daughter to the zoo. I'm a family man now, but I saw everything I needed to see. Yeah, there's going to be a quarterback battle, I think, again. Zach Lee had missed spring football, but you got Cody Green and Taylor Martinez, a guy who's really been a highlight reel this entire spring. But, yeah, there's going to be a battle there, I think, come fall. And it'll be interesting to see. But I think the defense is going to be good. They got a lot of speed on defense. And it's almost remarkable to think where they're at now compared to where they were when Bo first came in here. They were bad under Callahan, and there were a lot of question marks about depth and speed. And really, at least on the defensive side of the ball, Bo has made people believers out of the kids that are out there.
Jason Peter has been along with us on the Big East Sports Show. Of course, you can go to his website. That is jasonpeter.com. And I have to share, I was in Barnes & Noble, and I saw a whole stack of your books in there, Hero of the Underground.
I don't know if that's a good thing, if there was a whole stack. Now, if there was one or two.
Yeah, I probably exaggerate. There's probably about, I think, 3 or 4, but I was like, I know him. Yes, he's on the show. So we're going to take a little bit of a break with our Under the Helmet segment. And of course, we will return when college football season gets underway. Jason, it is always a pleasure. You bring so much color to our program. We love having you, and we will be anxiously awaiting your return.
Thank you, Alyssa. I love doing the show.
You bet. We're going to step aside, much more straight ahead here in just a minute on the Big East Sports Show.